Welcome to Sport Faith Life with Brian Bolt and Chad Carlson, two guys who came together for one common purpose, to think deeply about sport and faith. They are sports scholars, they're coaches, and they're competitive athletes, or at least they were. And together, they've created Sport Faith Life, a conversation that meets at the intersection of sport and faith.
Today on Sport Faith Life, we speak with Josh Lindblom. Josh grew up in Indiana and found out he could throw a baseball really hard. Josh eventually played college baseball at the University of Tennessee and Purdue, and then was drafted by the Dodgers in 2008 and made his major league debut in 2011. That started more than a decade of professional baseball, playing for multiple major league teams and the Korean Baseball League. All throughout, Josh's faith was his anchor and his witness. And of course, we love the fact that he thinks deeply about sport and faith. We can't wait to talk with Josh, so let's get started.
Well, we're so excited to have Josh Lindblom with us today. Josh, tell us a little bit about sport in your life.
Yeah, with Father's Day being yesterday, a lot of sport memories on the field with my son now. From the time that I was 4 or 5 years old, my entire life revolved around a field or a court. And so just growing up, always loved sport, always loved to play sport. It's funny, my son now, he has a little portable basketball hoop he hangs over the door. And I vividly remember wearing my Michigan Wolverines Fab 5 uniform and acting like I was part of the Fab 6, you know. But, you know, from then, grew up playing sport, obviously, and then was lucky enough and blessed enough to have the opportunity to play in high school and then to play in college at play baseball at University of Tennessee and Purdue University. And then I was drafted and played for 15 seasons professionally, Dodgers, Rangers, Phillies, A's, Pirates, Brewers, 5 years in Korea. I joke around and I say, I played for so many teams, I got to the point I didn't know if everybody wanted me or nobody wanted me. They were either trying to get me or get rid of me. And now I'm back in sport, in the same spot I was, coaching my kids and watching my kids and loving them, love the game.
Oh, there's a cycle there. We'll love to get into that in a few minutes. Tell us a little bit about faith in your life.
Same. It's funny, faith and sport kind of run these parallel paths in my life. From the time I can remember, my life was in a church, and on a field. And so my grandfather was a pastor for his entire life. It was funny. He retired probably before he passed away. He retired and then decided he wanted to plant a church for all of his friends. Because they didn't have anywhere to go. So he ended up pastoring until he passed away. And then my grandmother played the organ in the church. And so my earliest memories were running around a church or sitting under an organ, listening to my grandmother play. And so it's interesting to see how those two worlds, as I've grown, have begun to collide with one another. So it's been pretty amazing. And so I've been blessed to have people in my life that have helped me integrate faith and sport, and to see how God is involved and deeply cares about sport in my life and how he can use that as a vehicle and a platform. I think more than just for evangelism, I think sport and the context of sport is an unbelievable place for discipleship, like deep discipleship. And so just need to see how my faith and my sport and the love for both have kind of collided now later in life.
Josh, it's been great to hear just a portion of your story so far. So often with professional athletes, we think we know them. We see them on TV. We make assumptions about them. So peel back that assumption a little bit for us and tell us something about you that people wouldn't know. Some hobby, some interest, some travel, something unusual that would help folks get to know you.
This is kind of like two truths and a lie, huh?
Yeah, we'll try to pick one out.
We'll pick one out.
Yeah, you can do two lies if you like. That's fine.
Yeah. So I mean, I think probably an interesting thing about me is I'm kind of like a book nerd at heart. I love to learn. And so when I was playing, I finished my undergrad and my master's degree while I was still playing. So both in biblical studies, and theology. And so that's like something that not a lot of people know about me. Like I love to talk about faith and I love to talk about sport, but I also love to talk about it at like a deeper level than most people. And I think that kind of emerged from some of the shallow answers that I got in my life as an athlete, and they weren't meeting the needs that I had. For example, our daughter, our youngest daughter, she's 8 now, but she was born with a congenital heart defect, and she's had 2 open heart surgeries, and this is the middle of my career, and here I am, I'm trying to wrestle with pain and suffering and reconcile that with a God who tells me that he is good and that he is loving and that he is caring. And I'm in the middle of my master's degree program. And so it's like the stock answers, stock hallmark Christian answers that, hey, everything's going to be all right. God's got this. Those weren't meeting those needs. And so it was just neat to see how, God was able to use my studies, and the professors that I had to reconcile all of these seemingly contradictory answers that I had been given my whole life. And so long-winded answer, but I'm kind of a nerd at heart. So give me a book and I'll probably read it.
Well, actually you're ringing all the bells that we generally play here on Sport Faith Life. So we really appreciate that answer and we're eager to get back into it. I wonder if I could just take a phrase. You said God was involved in my sport. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about how God was involved in your sport, maybe through a pretty lengthy career. And tell me, I'm guessing with an undergraduate degree in biblical studies and a master's degree in biblical studies, sometimes people came to you for answers that, mm-hmm. The sort of pat answer was not helpful or effective. So kind of an open door there, but talk us through a little bit how that intersected.
Yeah, it was it really started probably the last couple years of my career. It was interesting now to look back and kind of like put pieces of this puzzle together and to see how, God being involved and God moving, kind of this like setting aside period where God needed to, educate and inform and prepare me for ministry and sport. And so, I look at the time that I was in Korea for 5 years, that made up the bulk of my master's degree program, where I only had one other teammate that spoke English, fluent English. The other one was from Latin America. And so there were other Americans there that I talked with, but like I had a lot of time to myself. And so I had a lot of time to wrestle and to learn and to think, where I wasn't necessarily, let's say, like deployed or unleashed yet to do the work of ministry, even though I was while I was there. But once I finished that and I came back to the U.S., and this would have been the COVID year. So 2020, 2021, 2022, I felt this movement of like, all right, now it's time to start helping and ministering and serving the athletes that God had placed on my teams, the coaches, the front office, the trainers, whoever it was. And so, I can only see this retrospectively looking back. And I think that's how life is usually lived. We don't see how God is working until we look back. A good friend of mine, mentor of mine, he says, there's never a time that God has not been working. And so the question is not, is he at work, but what is he at work doing? And then how do I partner and participate in his ongoing work? And so seeing how the last 3 years of my career leading Bible studies, it's really funny. Everybody knew that I'd be at a coffee shop in the morning. And so from about 10 a.m. on, my teammates would be on like a revolving door, like every 20 minutes. They'd come in, they'd grab coffee, we'd talk. they'd leave, next guy would come in. It was like this really neat routine that guys would have. They'd wake up, they'd Google map the closest coffee shop, they'd come, I'd be there. And you know, for a week, I'd get to sit and have coffee with my teammates and talk to them about life, and how that integrated with their faith and their sport and their families. And so it's just neat to see God being involved in those ways. And you know, my one prayer every morning is, Lord, give me eyes to see, ears to hear, and a mind to understand how you're working in my life.
So Josh, this has been done better and worse, I would say, at least well known to the public throughout the history of pro sports in the U.S., right? So we've had certainly times where professional athletes who've been well-known, well-documented Christians have approached the intersection of their faith and sport in different ways. And Brian and I had a guest on a couple of months ago who had written a book about the born-again Giants, right? The San Francisco Giants of the late 1970s, and how this group of Christian athletes, most of them were pitchers actually on that team in the late 70s, and were sort of proselytizing to their teammates, and also received a little bit of pushback, right? From, it was San Francisco, some of their teammates were not Christians, they didn't want to be Christians. And then we hear about this group of NFL quarterbacks, if you want to include like Kirk Cousins, Tim Tebow, Colin Kaepernick, who all sort of stood for something and expressed their faith in different ways. How would you categorize what you did among your teammates and the response from them, right? What was your approach? And clearly it's coming from a level of depth that might be unique even among Christian athletes.
Yeah. The first thing for me is just relationship. Relationship, and then I think presence are the two big things for me. It's kind of the way that I approached it. Guys asked me this question, you know, how were you able to talk with people about your faith on your team? You're in a secular environment. And, you know, I always told them, I said, I think the best compliment that you can ever receive as a teammate is somebody asking you, why are you the way that you are? You know, how are you able to handle failure the way that you do? Why don't you do the things that everybody else is doing? I see everybody going to chapel on Sunday and then they come out and they act the exact same, but you're actually different. And that is like, I mean, talk about like a wide open door. And my response, you know, that question is, oh, hey, let me tell you about this guy named Jesus. And that for me is, I think it's easy to say that you're a follower of Jesus. It's easy to talk about Jesus. Nobody's ever won an argument and convinced somebody to follow Jesus. And so I think that's what I've seen in clubhouses and in locker rooms for the course of my career, is that like the faith conversation usually turns into an argument rather than an actual conversation. You know, asking the question is like, okay, well, if you don't believe in God, tell me about the God that you believe in. And usually the God that they describe, the Jesus that they described, is nothing like the Jesus or God that I actually believe in either. And I'm like, that's amazing. We don't believe in the same God either. Let me tell you about the God of the Bible. And so just living, you know, Mother Teresa, I think, said, maybe, I think it was Mother Teresa, you know, sometimes you're the only Bible that people will ever have to read. And so, like, I think in a clubhouse, it's like the way you live your life. And then those open conversations, then building, you know, you talk about depth, building relationships of depth where guys or girls can come to you and trust you with the things that they think if they said out loud, everybody would think they were crazy. Because, you know, I say a lot of times, like, I want to have the conversation that you've never had before. The conversation that's playing in your mind that you're like, man, if I shared this, everybody would think differently about me. Because you guys know, everybody's having these conversations with themselves in their minds. They just don't want to express it out loud. And now it's neat to see with my kids and the teams that I coach and their parents, like they're having conversations in their minds too that they don't want to have out loud. And I want to have those conversations and create safe spaces for people to be able to express those things.
Josh, I love how you're filling a void there. You're kind of creating a space, like you said, mm-hmm. where anyone can come to you, whether it's an athlete or just somebody in the orbit of an athlete, mm-hmm. to talk to you about some of the things that happen around athletics in sport. Mm-hmm. At your level, it was an elite level.
Yeah.
But this happens now in your life at a very amateur level. You're mm-hmm. working in youth sport, and you get some of the same conversations. I wonder, you're also a person who says, you know, you think theologically, you think about some of these bigger issues. I wonder if you could talk about sport a little for me.
Yeah.
Chad gave you some sort of scenarios where athletes do it this way or athletes do it that way. Sometimes athletes, as their faith grows, they pull away from sport. And sometimes athletes, as their faith grows, they're sort of doubling down on excellence in sport. Yeah. I mean, tell me a little bit about how you understand sport in the world.
Oh man, how long do we have?
Yeah, we've got all kinds of time.
You may have part two on this. So I think you're exactly right. And when I look at, so if I back up for a second and I kind of like lay the land here, I think you described perfectly the way that modern, like Western Christianity has thought about sport, especially in the church. And so you have one side that says that church has no place in a believer's life if it's pulling them away from like the local body and community. And then you have the other side that's like, man, I just don't know what to do. So I'm just going to throw my hands up and kind of just do whatever. And so there's like these two completely polar opposite ends of the spectrum that I don't think are that helpful. And so when you look at, and I think this is all rooted like in the creation narratives. And so, you know, just had a camp last week. And the first question that I asked kids at these sports camps, I said, well, what is the first thing that we learn about God in the Bible? And I say, in the beginning, what? In the beginning, God created. And so God is a creator and he's creative. And then I say, what is the first thing that we learn about human beings in the Bible? Well, the first thing we learn about human beings is that God has created human beings in his image. And so while it's not limited to human beings creative, like that's a huge piece of how we express ourselves as human beings, as we image God forth into creation and into through community. And so I say, do you feel joy? It's the old Eric Liddell quote, do you feel joy when you play, when you climb a tree, when you draw, when you run, when you jump, when you throw a ball, when you shoot a ball? And the answer is obviously yes for these kids. And so, you know, God gives them two things to image him forth in through sport. One is talent and the second is relationships. And so those two things are naturally embedded in sport. You have talent, it's not even limited to sport either, but you have talents and you have relationships. And so sport actually is one of the greatest places that we can show people what God is like. But obviously we know that through the fall, through sin entering the world, sport has been, it's been tainted and it's been destroyed and it needs to be rebuilt. But I think that sport is one of the best contexts for discipleship, for imaging forth God and showing people what he is like. And you know, if I think when you set that, when that's the story that you're living in, where a good God has created a good world and given us great talents and an amazing avenue to show people what he's like, sport can be transformative for culture. Maybe unlike anything that we have in the world. But if you're not coming at it from that standpoint and you don't see the broader story that God is telling through creation, then I can see how people like might be, you know, have a hard time with seeing how God can use sport. Another example of this, if you want to take it like from a more practical level, is, you know, if I go to church on Sunday, let's say I spend 90 minutes at church. Then let's say I'm in a small group and I spend 90 minutes at my small group. There's roughly 3 hours. Then let's say my kids have youth group for an hour. You're looking at, let's call it 5 to 7 hours in church in church setting on a weekly basis. I did this math the other day. So this weekend we had practice for 6 hours with my kids, the kids that I coach. We had practice for 6 hours. Friday we had a game, so there's another 2 hours. So there's 8 hours. And then Saturday I was with my kids from 10 in the morning until 6 at night. So there's another 2, 8. So there's 16 hours. And then I spent from 8 in the morning until 6 at night with them the next day. So at a bare minimum, I'm with these kids, coaching them with their family, sitting on the sidelines, sitting waiting for the games for anywhere from 12 to 24 hours in the course of a week. Like, I don't think we have a problem with faith in sport. I think we have a problem with the intentionality that coaches and parents have with using it as a vehicle for the gospel.
Say more about this. I love what you're getting at here. And I'm coming at this from a place of familiarity too. Mm-hmm. What you described is exactly what my last week was.
Yeah,
for sure. The exact same thing. I was at a ball field all weekend long, and it didn't seem like the hours, if I'm going to consider myself to be a committed Christian, mm-hmm. and a committed sports parent, there's one of those that I spent more time doing.
Yes.
Say more about how this all plays out in the context of youth sport, especially, which is just where you are right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, so when you look at the way that people are developed, the way kids are developed, the way human beings are developed, is, you know, you can just go read the Gospels. And Jesus developed the disciples through life-on-life interactions. Like, it wasn't an 8-week program where Jesus said, hey, come sign up and show up. I'll be here at this time and that time. Jesus took everyday circumstances and scenarios and connected them to the bigger, broader picture of what God was doing in the world. And so really, if you have an intentionality and you have an eye to see and an ear to hear and a mind to understand, you can connect any moment in sport throughout the course of the day back to God. And I think sometimes as parents, and I know that I feel this way too, is sometimes I worry that if my kids don't get it now, then they'll never get it. But that's not the way that God works. That is, like, discipleship is a lifelong journey. To use Eugene Peterson, it's a long obedience in the same direction that doesn't end until Jesus brings us home. And you take what you have, you take the ingredients that you have, and the ingredients that I have right now are 12 to 24 hours, a sport that I love and I played for 15 years that God is not going to waste. I've got 11 kids, all of their brothers and sisters, all of their parents that I can help form, that I can help understand how God is at work in success and in failure, and help them see and paint a better picture for how sport can be used. And, I struggle sometimes because I think I'm intentional in this, but I also know that I have this saying that, you know, if you knew what I was trying to do, you would never let me do it. And so knowing when the door opens, and the parents and the kids and the coaches can see what I'm trying to do. But if I just came out and I said, you know, look, here's the deal. We're going to do this, this, and this. People will probably resist that. And so there is, like, Eugene Peterson also talks about, like, the subversiveness of Christianity and the subversiveness of ministry. And that's kind of the way that I view it too, where it's like, man, they don't even know what they're learning right now, but one day they're going to look back and they're going to say, oh my goodness, like, Coach Josh was teaching me this and I didn't even see it. And so that's what's cool about this context for sport, is like, if coaches could see the bigger picture, like, it's just such an amazing avenue.
I love that, Josh. And I think I might take it even one step further. Sometimes we might be alongside the Holy Spirit subversive, and yet sometimes we don't even know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And the Spirit is working on its own in some ways, right?
That's, that's probably the best formation when we don't even know what we're doing. I love
we don't know
it.
What we're doing, you know. And then somebody comes back to, I had this happen to me. A former student came back to me, a former athlete, and said, "Remember when you did this?" And I said, "No, I do not." But you know, that made an impact in that moment. I wonder. That's a great, you know, beginning of a theological conversation about ministry, about sport, about all those things connecting, and really this idea that these worlds or spheres are not separated. Mm-hmm. I wonder if I could shift us a little bit to think about, and I'm just curious about this. You've got kids playing right now. They're playing sports and you're watching them, and Chad is too. You know, you're coaching, you're participating, they're playing. You became a professional athlete. And somewhere along the way, you know, your play turned into a vocation. It turned into very much a job.
Yep.
I wonder, what did sport do to you in that place? Did you sort of flip the way you thought about it? We have, you know, great theology of play, but we also have theology of work. Did you start thinking more about sport as work, or were you able to maintain sport as play? I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually talked about, our friend Paul Putz Baylor, I actually just texted him about this, and I told him, I said, I want to have a conversation. I'm kind of enamored with the Savannah Bananas right now. Initially being a professional baseball player, I'm like, oh, you know, grumpy, you're like, that's not baseball. What are you doing? But I'm seeing what these guys are doing with their platforms, sharing the gospel, talking about Jesus, praying over stadiums. And so like, I started to like watch a little bit more, and I texted Paul and I said, Paul, I think what the Savannah Bananas are doing might be the closest thing that we have to of an embodied vision of what sport would be like in heaven. Mm. When you look at like first joy, I mean, just the pure joy that surrounds these places. It's unbelievable. These guys they're not picking these guys up on the side of the road either. Like it's competitive baseball. They're still throwing pitches that they have to hit. Guys are still getting out. They're doing it with backflips and fans. Like it's amazing. I mean, it's really amazing. But when you think about play, I mean, these guys are playing the game, like not just like we're going out for nine innings, like they're having fun and they're playing like backyard. They're also being highly competitive and they're failing, but they're doing it in such a way that like it makes it okay. And so, you know, to go back to the question that you asked, like, I wish I didn't start doing this till later in my career. But I wish that I would have integrated a little bit more play and fun into the game, because a manager of mine told me, he said, you know, the game never forgets it's a game we do. And what I see is that people forget that it's a game earlier and earlier and earlier in their lives. And, you know, so I'm saying this as somebody that this is how I put food on the table for my family. And the stress that I felt when I would fail as a player, the mental anguish you go through when you're going through a bad stretch or a slump or you're not performing well, wondering if you're going to have a job at the end of the week. I wish that I would have been able in the moment to say, hey, this is a game. God has blessed me with the talent and I'm prepared. I've done my job is to prepare. I can't control results. Now I can just go out and play. And I can have fun and I can enjoy this gift that I've been given. Because if going back to the theological side of it, is that if I believe that God is who he says he is and that he will provide for me no matter what the scenario, then like I've already won. Because I'm using the talents that he's given me to show people what he's like. Now I can go just have fun in front of these people and show people how he's blessed me.
Josh, we've talked a lot about youth sport. We've talked a little bit about, we've asked about your past. Mm-hmm. With what you just said, the battle's already been won, right? I've already won. It's been won for me. What do you have going on right now? The next couple of months, the next couple of years, what does that look like in terms of what you're doing related to ministry and sport?
Yeah. You know, this is, I think the youth sport thing, it always comes up. You know, I'm working with some pro athletes right now and some performance mentoring, performance coaching, a lot of the mindset stuff. I've been doing that. But it's been interesting to see how this youth sport, high school age, coach, parent, coming alongside. I've started working with quite a few high schools, coaches, athletes on the same thing that I've been doing with pro athletes. And so it's been really interesting just to see how big of a need this is. You know, I talked with a parent the other day, high school kid, and tells me his story. He says his son leaves the cage and he comes up to him and he says, "Dad, I don't know who I am without the sport." And like, you know, you're talking about sophomore high school. And, you know, just the going back to the conversations that you've never had before, being able to create a space for those conversations to help athletes, to help parents, especially, you know, I've kind of narrowed down. There's three people in sport. There's pros, and those are people that are living their dream. There's prospects. Those are people that are chasing their dream. And then there's parents, and those are the people that are supporting somebody else's dream. And so each one of those different people needs help in some way. And looking back over my career, it's interesting now, like the one that I'm probably least qualified to talk into is this people supporting somebody else chasing a dream, but it's the one that keeps popping up. And, you know, saying, "All right, God, if this is a door you want me to walk through, how do we do that?" But I think going back and kind of connecting a dot with the question you asked earlier is there's, you know, our value and worth, I think, as leaders, coaches, is often tied to the performance of our athletes. And it's the same thing as a parent is, you know, when my son or my daughter fails on a court or a field, I feel like everybody's looking at me. Everybody's, you know, judging the way that I failed as a parent. And, you know, I think that creating a space for that where it's like, you know, most of the, you know, I think the youth sport gets a horrible, we only see the bad news stories. But those reactions that people have are rooted in the fact that they're trying to derive their value and worth from somebody else's performance. And like, that's a really, really bad place to be, because I joke around all the time and I say, you know what? 10-year-olds are going to 10-year-old. And if I'm trying to find my value on the kids that I coach and my reactions, like, it's going to be a really long season. But just coming alongside of people and helping them, remind them, helping coach them through, you know, what are some of the signs that pop up with your reactions? How do you handle this or that? Parents, how do we deal with, you know, whatever the situation might be? So it's just been neat to see how God's been able to use that.
Well, Josh, being a college coach, I can tell you that college kids are going to college kid as well.
I love it.
We had
a game the other day. We walked like 14 kids, and then we gave up one hit and we lost. And I'm like, I'm driving home with my wife and I'm like, when are they going to get it? Like, that they just need to throw the ball over the plate. And then I was watching the low A team with the Brewers, and they walked 14, gave up like three hits and lost the game. And I'm like, well, if they're lucky enough, they'll be playing professional baseball in low A and they still won't get it yet. So I can take a step back and relax.
Still won't throw strikes. That's exactly right. No, that's exactly right. Josh, what a great conversation. Just to start, we really appreciate you coming on Sport Faith Life with us and sharing some of your story, sharing your wisdom as well. We encourage you, this is a great space to be in, to continue to talk to the professionals, the prospects, and the supporters. That's outstanding. Thanks so much for being with us, and we hope to talk to you again in the future.
Yeah, this is great to connect. Thank you, guys, and thank you for what you're doing.
Thanks for tuning in to the Sport Faith Life podcast, a conversation at the intersection of sport and faith. Read the corresponding blog post and learn more about us at sportfaithlife.com. Listen to more of our podcasts on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and follow us on social media to stay up to date with everything sport, faith, life.